Welcome to the Kelly Cardenas podcast, where attitude is everything. On today's show, I've been chasing this dude for a while. I've been reaching out to him, and he really changed my life because I saw a completely different level of service. I had never, ever in my life enjoyed the experience of buying a car. And anybody out there that a lot of times is that, oh man, I don't want to have to sit for a couple hours, whatever it was. My wife fell in love with this dude. I fell in love with this dude. I was so happy that I called my brother right away. My brother bought a car from there. My brother's sister bought a car from there. My brother actually bought multiple cars. His sister bought multiple cars. And I had coworkers that did. And it was because the service and the culture and what this man created. He is an absolute genius. So I want you to welcome to the show, Mr. Jimmy DiGiulio, the general manager and minority partner of Volvo Cars in Las Vegas.
Kelly, how you doing, man?
I'm doing amazing, man. I hope I got that out, the whole title part of it, because like, you know, I stuttered a little bit on it, and hopefully the listeners out there, they understand me. It's a long title. I think the longer the title, the more important the person is.
Well, okay, we might need to start this whole thing over then.
I want to jump right in, Jimmy, because, you know, well, I call you Jimmy, but that's where the Instagram is. So if you want to hit him on Instagram, it's at Jimmy underscore DiGiulio, which I'm mad at him for the underscore because it takes me two keypads. I have to change two keypads to get to the underscore.
Double tap is terrible.
Tough. It wears me out. But the real thing, you want to hit him up on at Hit Run Repeat. And you can find him at Volvo, FinleyVolvo.com. And make sure the Finley has an A in it at the end. FINDLAY. Volvo.com. You can find him there. But I want to jump right in because you created the craziest culture I've ever seen in my entire life. When I walked in, I didn't get a chance to meet you, right? And I met a guy, Seth, and he showed me the car and he said, I'm not going to tell you any of the features or benefits of this car. This car will sell itself. Let me know if you want to buy it. I'm here for you, but I just want to make sure you have a great experience. I was blown away. My wife was blown away. My wife does not like buying cars. She does not like the experience. Right. But she was like, you need to buy that car because of that. Talk to us about this kind of culture and how you're able to build this, Jim.
I think, it's culture trumps everything, right? And I think for any organization, it's really critical to define that culture of what you want it to be, because that culture becomes the lens through which decisions are made. And once you have a clear idea of what you want to be or what you want the business to be, then the decisions become a lot easier, you know, and you, to me, an employee should never, ever, ever has to ask me permission to do what's right. Just do what's right and take care of it. And away we go, right? Have a culture that people want to buy a car. I mean, that's a really, really big thing in our industry. It's not a great experience. Right. I mean, as a matter of fact, Carvana last year spent $100 million telling people it was a terrible experience in advertising. They spent $100 million in advertising to tell people not to go to a car dealership. Right. So, you know, for us to stay relevant, we have to have a great culture. We have to have a great experience because we're under attack. Right. We just are. And so once you establish the fact that you want to be friendly, that you want to have that place that people want to buy a car, that it is a fun, and it should be fun. Buying a car should be exciting. Buying a car should be a great time. It shouldn't be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get a tooth pulled. Like, this is awful, right? It ought to be fun. I mean, it's a big purchase. It's, you're in it frequently. It's your family. It's safety, security. It could be, there's a lot of reasons. It could be image. It could be whatever, right? But it ought to be a good time. And so frequently it's misery. There's no transparency. There's no trust. It's just an awful experience, right? So we set out, and my message was, we're going to do it better and cleaner than other people. And so those types of things became the lens, the hiring lens, the decision-making lens, you know, all of the processes and things that we put in place, we tried to put in place with that in mind.
This episode is brought to you by one of my favorite companies in the entire world, the Mina Group. As one of the top culinary experiences in the world, celebrity chef Michael Mina and his team are dedicated to giving you what you never knew you always wanted. With 30 locations throughout the world, this company is focused on the one thing that truly matters, their people, and that is why they are your world of wow. Change your life by going to michaelmina.net. So, Jim, I mean, for all of you listening out there, honestly, this experience, and it continued to get better. I didn't realize, like, my first experience, I went and I bought, this was the first time that I got to buy in my life where I chose everything about the car, and I got there. The whole experience was so phenomenal, and I had dreamed of having the car on the showroom floor and then driving it out of the place. Well, when I got there to sign the papers, the car was shiny, it was washed, everything like that, and it was outside. And I remember just kind of looking down a little bit and saying, I really wanted to drive it off the showroom floor. And you guys were like, bam, didn't even question. And you guys went and opened the thing up, backed the car in, shut the doors, put it on the showroom floor, and let me experience it on a whole nother level. And then my second one, I called you, I was living here in California, and I called Las Vegas and I said, Jim, I need to, you know, it's about time. And you said, don't worry. A couple days later, it shows up at my house, backs off the truck, and then they pick my other car up. Guy hands me some papers and says, send them back when you can. I mean, but not only that, but the care and the love. So let's talk about young Jim. Where did you learn this? I mean, are you just a superhero? Are you from some other planet? Or do you know something that we don't? Or where did this start from? Let's talk about early Jim on that.
I think, first of all, I had a lot of great people in my life along the way. I think there is no question that to achieve things or to grow or develop, being around the right people is I cannot overstate that enough how important that is. But you know, a lot of it came from failure. There were many things along the way that I did incorrectly. I did wrong. Whether that was attitude, whether it was just mistakes with decision making, whether it was, you know, whatever. And so the young Jim, I don't know if you want to call it pre-successful. I've been pretty blessed. I've been able to accomplish a few things along the way, but the younger me, I had to make the most important sale of my life, which was the sale to myself. I had to sell myself on the fact that, okay, you know what? I'm going to step out of my comfort zone and I'm going to ask for new responsibilities as I was growing, as I was learning. And so a lot of that happened at Findlay Toyota. You may not even know this, Kelly, but I started as a salesperson at Findlay Toyota in December of 1998. And the reason I started as a salesperson at Toyota was because I had just gotten dumped in Cleveland by this girl. I moved across the country in a 1987 Buick and everything I owned was in it. And I was going to go back to school. I was going to go to UNLV. I was going to get a teaching certificate. And I was going to teach and coach because my whole life was, I've been in sports. You know, I played sports through college. I sports resonate with me. I love sports. And that was who I was going to be. And I did not want to get back in the car business. I'd had about 2 years experience before in Indianapolis. But I was broke. I couldn't not work, right? I had to start to make something happen. And so I go to this BMW store. The guy doesn't give me the time of day, like not even a gratuitous pound sand, right? I got nothing. So I'm driving along the auto mall and I see this Toyota store and I'm like, well, Toyota makes good cars. Let me see if they're hiring. And, you know, I walk in, they said they weren't hiring. And an hour later I had a job. And the general manager there was named Rich Abadjan. He passed away about 5 years ago, but that guy was super influential in my life. He was super influential with work ethic and process and drive and motivation. And he was awesome. He was a really, really big part of becoming who I am. And so at that store, you know, I would get there. I was one of the first people there every morning. And I was there with, at the time was the GSM. Now the general manager, his name's John Barr. And, you know, we would have these morning conversations before everybody else came in. And so, you know, I moved up to like an assistant used car manager position. And then, you know, he was kind of complaining about the lack of effectiveness of some of our other managers or floor managers. And I just said to him, I said, I'll do it. And he kind of looked at me and said, you want to do that? I said, I got to do it to get to where I want to go. And like 2 months later, that was it. And then moved up again. And I kept asking for stuff that I didn't know how to do. And one thing is 100% certain, every job I ever had in the car business ever was easier before I had it. I would always look up and I'm like, man, what did these guys do? Like, this is, I got to get to there because that just looked great, right? And then I would get in the seat and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm dying right now. I got things coming at me. I got no idea what's going on. I'm drowning. I'm like, you know, but you just work through it and you work through those struggles. And so, you know, I think there was a few things, not a few, there's a lot of things that got me to this mindset that I have now. And again, a lot of it was just asking for new stuff and being good at what I was currently doing, right? I think for young employees that are trying to climb the ladder, be good at what you're doing now before you worry about moving up to the next step. Because it's, you know, so many young people want to, you know, they want to be that quote unquote overnight success. Well, for me to become a general manager, it took a decade of 70 hour work weeks, right? I mean, it wasn't, and I was called an overnight success. I became a GM. My first GM job was at Finley Volkswagen. I was 34 years old. And they're, oh, you're so young. You know, you're like an overnight success. I'm like, yeah, overnight, all right. It was a lot of overnights. You know, but, you know, young people forget that. I have a lot of people that are really talented and they're smart and they're on the path and, you know, they want to move up so fast. And it's like, you know, listen, you gotta be really good at what you're doing now. And then I'll give you more responsibility. Right. So that, you know, I really tried to be mindful of that. I just really had to, you know, when I talk about the sell, the most important sale of my life, really it's selling out, right? I had to sell out for myself to be bought in enough to do what I wanted to do.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you're enjoying it. Now's the time to do some shameless promotion. This episode is brought to you by Squeeze Dried, a delicious, no-hassle way to get superfoods, vitamins, and nutrition. SqueezeDried.com. It's also brought to you by Cardenas Law Group, a high-level boutique law firm for all your personal injury needs. That's CardenasLawGroup.com. Thank you so much again for listening. Hopefully, you're continuing to enjoy the episode. So let's go back in it. One of the foundational things that you talked about was sports, right? So yep. Talk to us about young Jim and how sports, how it played such a role. I mean, even with us hiring in our company, a lot of times I'll ask a kid, and this is crazy in the professional beauty industry to ask a kid, did you play sports growing up? Because a lot of kids were, you know, they were artists or whatever it was.
Sure.
But I find that most of my performers and the people that I see perform at a high level have some sort of sports background. How did that affect you?
I'm a huge believer in sport, huge believer, not just from the physical activity point of view. Cause I think you know, as humans, you got to stay active, you've got to stay busy and exercise and getting outside. And especially now, you know, when you and I were growing up, we didn't have the same inputs and the same screen time and the same, you know, all the things that you could classify as a negative bucket. We also didn't have the positive things, which was information at our fingertips and inspiration and all the things that you can get instantly now. But I'm a huge believer in sport because there's life lessons that are super important. You're going to get knocked down, right? Get back up. You got to play with other people, right? And sports does that. Or if you're a solo sport, maybe you came up and you were playing golf, right? That takes a certain amount of discipline, and discipline counts. You know, discipline people succeed. Or, you know, for instance, golf, you got to forget the last shot and move on, right? Have memory like a goldfish, 10 seconds, move, gone, you're done, right? And so to me, those fundamentals where you got to show up on time. And, you know, I'm a big believer 5 minutes early is 10 minutes late. And my college coach would, I literally saw him leave a player behind on the bus one time because it was late. And the player had to follow the bus, drive in his car to get out to the team hotel so they could play in the game. I mean, it was an ugly scene, but Coach Mallory did not play. He was, that was, and so, but that's one of those values, right? That's one of those life lessons that come along that you, that stick with you if you have enough repetition, because I do think repetition is the mother of all learning. So I think those types of environments, right? The locker room talk where you're friends and, but maybe you upset each other and now, you know, can you still be boys? Right. There's so many things about relationships and showing up and working hard that I think translate really, really well into life. I've joked, my son Parker played club baseball and my daughter plays club soccer and they competed at pretty decent levels. And I joked that my kids were in public school and private sports, but, cause I just think there's value there.
So tell me too about, like, people talk about core values. You interweaved core values into those things and how you were learning them as you went along. People talk mm-hmm. about this and a lot of times with companies or with organizations and trying to build a culture, they have a tough time finding what their core is. How were you able to find that in the culture that you have today, whether it be in your home, or in your work? How were you able to define those? Because it seems like you have a couple simple ones, you stick to them, and then you go at it.
Yeah, I think it's funny. In certain ways, the reputation of the car business chose it for me, right? Because it is generally a bad experience. And I hate to say it, but it is. The reputation is pretty well deserved, right? So I didn't want to be that. I absolutely did not want to be that. I fight every single day of my life to not be that, right? So the profession that I was in kind of, in a way, chose my number one core value, which is trust and transparency. Do it the right way. And you know, I've got some other little things that I'm sure we'll talk about, but, you know, I think for somebody struggling to figure out what it is, be true to yourself. I'm like you. I'm a faithful guy. I'm a Christian. Be true to yourself. Don't go against what you know is right just because it might be profitable or it might be easy or it might be whatever, right? It's stick to your true north. Stick to your compass, and the rest will work itself out.
So, Jim, talk to us about a time, because you were just talking about, principles over profit, right? And talk to us about a time where you left money on the table. Tell us specifically when you left money on the table because you needed to go principal and the profit was sitting right there and you could get it, but you were going to jeopardize your principal.
You know, is it a transaction or a relationship? And to me, it's a relationship. And so I would, you know, I would discount a car maybe more than I needed to, right? Because I want to build a relationship with that guest. I need them to be part of my family, because otherwise, like you were saying in the introduction, right? It's your brother and other referrals and sister, like, you know, that doesn't happen if we don't take care of you on day one. Right. That's happened many times, or maybe somebody buys a new car. The car is perfect. Right. And I know it's perfect because we've looked at it. We've inspected it. We did our pre-delivery inspection. I know the car is great. And they buy a car on Friday. And on Wednesday, they call me and they say they got a flat tire and they're upset. I know there was no nail in that tire when they left. But many times I said, you know what? We'll take care of this one for you. right? And it's not, and we don't patch tires, we replace tires. So it's not, so for those of you out there that are like, oh, big deal, it's, you know, $8 plug and, you know, no, it's been a $400 tire or, you know, it's like, yeah. It's, you know, I didn't give away a coffee mug. It was something that was legit, but you know, I just wanted that person to know, hey, you know, we're here for you. We're going to be here for you after the sale. And so, you know, for me, I value relationship over transaction. And that becomes, again, that becomes one of the lenses through which we make decisions.
So I was just talking with a guy named Justin Breen. I was telling you that I wanted you to meet him. He's flying at the Tony Stark kind of situation with all kind of technology. And this is happening in your business too. Technology is coming in. It's even happening in the professional beauty industry, which I never thought that that part would be so big. But what my dad said is the other day, he said, look at your phone, son. I looked at my phone. He's like, you know, that phone will be obsolete in the next 8 to 11 months, and you're going to have to buy a new one. So if you keep studying that phone, if you keep focusing on that phone, you're constantly going to be behind and chasing something. So dedicate yourself to the study and the relationships that you have in the people. I want to tell you about a time that really solidified. For me, I don't care where you ever go, Jim. It's the kind of car I will drive. And this is the reason why. We were doing March Madness. You remember the story. I came one time to get service at Audi. Well, you were working at Audi at the time. Mm-hmm. You were the general manager there.
Yep.
I walked into your office. We're having a conversation. In passing, I look. And in passing, I don't say, hey, I want it, anything like that. In passing, I look over and I'm like, oh, wow, Jim, that's a really cool snowboard. It was an Audi snowboard. I was like, man, that thing is awesome. It was an A8 snowboard.
Yep.
About 2 months later, I'm with all my boys at March Madness, and Seth calls me and says, hey, where are you at? I need to come and drop something off from Jim. And he shows up with the snowboard.
Yep.
Talk to me about that experience and how important it is to understand and pick up on the nuances and be able to deliver. Because when you delivered on that level, I mean, I had bought cars from you. My family had bought cars from you.
Sure.
But literally, it was a snowboard that solidified the character of Jim in my life. Can you talk to me about that?
And by the way, if I'm not mistaken, I just saw a post where you and your family were out skiing a week or two ago, and you still got it.
Hey, I'm riding it like nobody on the mountain has this Audi
nobody
snowboard.
Nobody has that.
Nobody.
This makes one in a row, baby. You have it. Oh, that's amazing. You know, I think when you really care, right? And I think that's the most important culture piece to me. I talk regularly about create a culture of caring. So care about each other, care about your guest, care about doing the job the right way, care about the process. You know, if you create a culture of caring, right, then these things they'll reveal themselves. These opportunities will reveal themselves. And so when you were checking it out, I picked up on it, right? I care about you and I care about our relationship and your family is important to me. And I just thought to myself, all right, I'm going to remember that one here. And I honestly thought it was fun. I thought it was fun. Like, Hey Kel, I got something for you, man. And cause I knew there was no way in the world that you would expect that. Right. And so for me, I was like, well, this is going to be kind of fun. And in a way we went, but I think as an organization, if you have a culture of caring where your people truly care about the guest and the relationship that you're building and building something that maybe is a little bit bigger than themselves or bigger than the moment, those opportunities will reveal themselves all over the place. And sometimes, you know, I've literally heard stories where a car dealership didn't want to give somebody a mug or a hat or something like that. And those are the craziest things to me. It's just more fun to say yes and do something a little out of the ordinary, a little surprising. You know, it's better that way.
So how are you able to transfer this culture? Because what I've seen, and for those of you out there, if you're in Vegas or, I mean, heck, all over the country, this is where you need to buy your cars. But No matter who I've touched in your organization, wherever you've been, Jim, it has been like I'm talking to Jim. It's not like I know Jim, and the person switches their tone. It's, I know Jim, and the person's like, oh, cool, and I'll continue to act the way that I'm acting right now because this is my culture. How are you able to transfer that? Because most people told me as a business owner when I first started in, it'll never be the same unless you're there every single day. No one will care for it the way that you, and I don't believe that, and you have right. showed me that that's not true. Your people care at a level that sometimes, I mean, transcends who you are as a leader, which is amazing.
Yeah, you know, I've been asked a few times about my hiring process, and I have this really, really complex formula, and here's the formula. Do I want to hang out with this person? that is my, you know, thesis on hiring. It is, do I want to hang out with this person? And if they're sitting across from me and I don't want to hang out with them, they're probably not a good fit for my organization, right? They're probably not a good fit for the people who are going to be doing business with my organization. You know, and that's not to say that I'm going to be best buddies with everybody necessarily, right? But there has to be a quality. There has to be, a charisma or a personality or something that I find interesting, because I will teach somebody how to sell cars. That happens. That's a process, and that happens over time. And for people new in the car business, honestly, it's a year, year and a half at least. It's not you don't go into a classroom for a week and come out like an expert car. That's not going to happen. It's too, just like in your industry. I mean, you can't put somebody in a classroom for just the cosmetology school or whatever it is that they're going through, right? And all of a sudden they're baller when they come out. It's a process, and it's development, and it's learning, and it's constant. And so for me, I'm like, if I want to be around this person, everything else we'll figure out.
Here we go again with the shameless promotion. This episode is also brought to you by Piper Diamonds for all your jewelry needs. My necklace that I get complimented all over the country and all over the world. My pendant was made by Piper Diamonds Company. This place is absolutely phenomenal. When you're looking for that special something for that special someone, Piper Diamonds is the only answer. It's piperdiamonds.co. And it's also brought to you by Kelly Cardenas Salon in Las Vegas and in Chicago. This is top level service, guys, without the ego, and hands down the greatest shampoo experience that you will ever have in your life. This will create an evangelistic type experience. You will be talking about this for years and years to come. The wash house, completely separate area, different sound system, soundproofed head, neck, and shoulder massage. You will be over the moon with your experience, and you can schedule your appointment at KellyCardenasSalon.com. Enjoy the rest of the episode. So Jim, help me to understand too, because one of the other things, I mean, that you helped me with was, I remember I was buying a car for my wife. It was right around Christmas time. And you sent me home with one, which was awesome. You were like, take it for the day, and I want you to experience it. It was phenomenal. I came back to you, and you sat me down and said, based off of your needs, this isn't the car for you. You need to buy another brand. And you sent me to another place. Like, I went to another place and bought another mm-hmm. car off your recommendation, because you said, what I have is not going to be in that place, whether it be for the option and the price or whatever yep. it was. And for me, I was blown away. I was like, wait a second, isn't he supposed to tell me that I should just only buy with him and this is what I need? And you looked at my needs more than you looked at your sale. Why is that so important? And how are you able to do that? How are you able to? That was some Jedi stuff. Could you send me down the street? But I was at down the street talking to the other people about buying with you while I had got something else.
Yeah, it goes back to what I said earlier. Relationship is more important than transaction. I know that I'm going to be in this business for a while, right? So I don't have the pressure I don't get me wrong. I want every deal, right? I mean, I want it all. I want people to buy what I have. There is no, don't get that twisted one bit. I absolutely want people to buy what I have, but it also needs to be good for them, because if I sell somebody something that they regret, or that turns into a negative for them, their family, their life, then that long-term relationship is in jeopardy. And so that's how I view it. And again, like I said, I'm a competitive dude. I want to win them all. But the win maybe is the next car, or your brother's next car, or whatever the case may be, because I know that I'm going to be here for a while. And I think that's the difference between a job and a career for a lot of people. People with a real short focus don't tend to make those same types of decisions. The people that are only interested in the right now don't tend to make those types of decisions. And so sometimes I think it's helpful to step back, really analyze the situation on a little bit of a higher elevated view and say, okay, what do I want the outcome to be here when it's all said and done?
So Jim, let's go back to little Jimmy. I'm talking grade school Jimmy.
Okay.
You know, let's talk with what principles. What principles did your parents, I mean, were your parents imparting these things? Did they have sayings? My dad has like three sayings. I've said this over and over again. Shout out to Pops. You've met him. You know him.
Oh, Big Tom, baby. Yeah,
and Big Tom. And he says, breathe, drink water, and pray. And that's his answer to everything in the whole world. What were your principles that your parents were beating into your head that at first you resisted, and now you're like teaching your daughter and your son?
I think, and you probably don't, you may or may not know this actually. So my parents separated when I was 11, divorced when I was 13. I went through a really, really bad time with my birth dad. He and I basically didn't talk to each other for several years. When I was 18, I took the name DiGiulio. My birth name was Yingst, which is a Swedish name. But I changed it to DiGiulio when I turned 18. Because my stepdad at that point in my life was basically my dad. And so the things I learned, I didn't come from that sort of traditional, well, I don't even know what's traditional anymore, right? But when we were young, that stereotypical traditional beaver cleaver house with a lot of those things, you know, I'll never forget that when I first got into car sales, which was post-college, I had my college degree, I majored in sport marketing. And when I first started working on commission, my mom, who was a teacher, and my dad was a police officer, they were mortified because they just said to me, hey, you don't know how much money you're going to make. And I said, exactly. I don't know how much money I'm going to make. Exactly. But I'm going to bet on me. Right. But I think growing up, what they imparted, and again, a lot of it came from athletics. I don't even remember starting in athletics. I think it was literally always a part of my life. I mean, it was just there. Both of my parents, I'm talking about my mom and my birth dad, had degrees from Ohio State, and they're just massive Ohio State fans. And so, you know, in my household, it was God and then Woody Hayes, except maybe on Saturday when we were playing Michigan. And then maybe Woody was, you know, took the lead for a minute. And so a lot of what I learned did come from the athletic side. Both of my parents valued education and discipline and working. And, you know, they were, you know, my mom was straight to the point. If you're not on a roll, you're not playing sports, period. So I was like, all right, well, I guess that's what I'm going to do then, because I'm playing sports. Like, that's going to happen. I think I didn't really grow up with a lot of those sayings. I didn't grow up with sort of a motivational speaker type of mindset, but I was around enough people. I've been blessed enough to be around enough people in my life that those things came in as I went through, you know, middle school, high school, into college, and then post college.
So a lot of times when there's in a broken home, which when you said I'm non-traditional, that's traditional, right? So you're abnormal nowadays if your parents stayed together. But in that type of situation, a lot of times, we as men, we follow in the footsteps of what we saw. So if we come from a broken home, a lot of times we continue on and we continue on that cycle. One of the things that I admire about you so much, and I've never got a chance to tell you personally, is the way in which you love your wife, the way in which you love your kids. And it's not like you're not an Instagram dad that's like, yo, I'm here with the kids and, you know, I'm doing this. And then I'm not with them at all. So I'm just showing pictures of this. You're not posting up this kind of stuff. I just see it. And I've got a chance to be around your wife. I mean, I see the love that you guys have, and I'm not saying that anybody's perfect, but what influences did you have to break that cycle as you move forward?
God, right? My wife and I are both faithful, and you know, we've been through hard times. We just, as a matter of fact, we just had our 20-year anniversary. So, that's big time there. Love you, Stacey D. 010101. It's an easy one to remember, but it's, you know, we've had struggles. And a lot of couples have struggles, right? But we both have a belief in God. We both have faith, and we have faith in each other. And I think with decision-making in general, right? And with spousal stuff, it can be difficult because the emotions, when emotions get high, sometimes it's hard to process and think and really, really take a step back. But I think in general, with decision making, a really, really important question to ask yourself is, what do I want the outcome to be? Right? Our brain will start to align our actions, our thoughts, our words with how we want the outcome to be. And so I want a great relationship with my wife. I want her to love me. I want to love her. And sometimes I've had to step back. Okay, how do I want this to go? And I'll tell you how I want it to go. I want it to go great. That's how I want it to go. And so that then starts to shape the conversation. It starts to shape my actions or maybe, maybe how I handle a certain situation. You know, is this still really important a week from now or 2 weeks from now? If it is, then it's probably, you know, really worth a real conversation. If it's not, if I'm just frustrated about something, then let's move on. Let's let it go.
Another pause for station identification and shameless promotion. This episode is also brought to you by Finley Cars of Las Vegas. I tell you, next level in the car buying experience. And not only that, but the life of your car, the service that you're going to experience is incredible. It's Finley Volvo Cars, LV.com. And also brought to you by Bling Shine Serum, the only product on the market that will add weightless moisture, strength, and shine, and the only product that has the endorsement of my mama. When I showed her all the features and benefits, she smelled it and she said, "This is the greatest product that you've ever done." And I thought, "Mom, do you not look at the features and benefits?" She said, "No, if it smells like that, it must work." And I tell you, every single woman needs a little bit of bling in their life, and this can be purchased at KellyCardenasSalon.com. So what type of, I'm not a huge ritual, like when I say ritual, I don't like to get caught up in the ritual. I don't want to be dependent on the ritual itself. But what are some of the things that the listeners out there could do in their relationship to be able to set them up? Or what do you do? Like some people talk about like, hey, I do date night. I mean, for us in our family, one of the things that we do is we sit around the table, and when we have dinner, then we go around and we pick whoever starts off. So if it's McKenna, we say, okay, everybody has to say something specific about McKenna that inspires them. And then we go to Maddox, and then we go to Mom, and then we go to me, and we do this before we eat. This is a little bit of a ritual, and it kind of gets people trying to catch people doing good things. What are you doing? What can they do, the people that are listening, in their relationships right now to start down on this path of getting to a better place?
Sure. I think if you're struggling a little bit, and if things are going great, it's really important to be intentional. And every relationship is different. You know, your situation is different. No two families are exactly alike, for sure. And so the exact specific rituals or the habits or whatever you develop, that will reveal itself. I think as long as you have intention and you really are present with each other, then the other things will show themselves, but you got to have that intentionality. You have to want to be engaged with that person.
So talk to me too about, like, you're one of the top in the industry of what you do. I mean, you're a super humble guy. But those of you listening, this is a killer. This guy is a killer. Like, I mean, when you lock onto something, Jim, I mean, the fierce competitor part, you're so humble in it. You got humility, but I tell you, I don't want to be in a ring with you. I don't want to be in an arena with you because there's only one coming out and most likely it's not going to be me. And so you have that killer instinct. Talk to us about when you have that killer instinct, creating a culture that you do, becoming as successful as you have in your industry. How is it that you adapt that in your family? Because a lot of times people who are just high level come into the family like a wrecking ball. What have your kids taught you how to make your business better?
What have my kids taught me about making my business better? I think the biggest time is there. The biggest thing is knowing when it's time for them. It's a problem that I've had. I think it's a problem with, as connected as we all are, is to be able to put the phone down or be really intentional about spending time with them. And they've kind of taught me that I don't have to be there 100% of the time. At work, right? Yeah. I can dedicate that time to them. I can leave it to the people that I've hired, the people that I trust. And then tomorrow morning we'll pick right back up and let's see where we're at and we'll get after it again. But they've taught me, and you're going to experience this in not too long. Cause you know, McKenna's 12, right?
Yes.
So my son Parker just went to college last year. Exactly. And I got to tell you, I looked back and I thought that was so much faster than I thought that was going to be. Right. And I doubted myself. Did I spend enough time? Should I have done this other stuff? All these thoughts start going through your head, because now you're starting to send them out into the world. I mean, you know, he's still calls and says, "Hey, mama," you know, which is awesome. But it's a really surreal experience when you pass through that, and so that taught me that time is undefeated, and it clips along at a pretty good pace, and it's important. It's important to be intentional with those things.
How are you able to? Culturally, okay, so when you're growing, right, and you're just breaking ground for the new Volvo in Las Vegas, which congratulations. Yep. On that, you guys
Thank
are doing
you.
That
that's gonna be awesome. Yeah,
it's gonna be outrageous, right? When you're growing, you have this spirit of, it's kind of almost like Braveheart, like, you know, hold the ground, like, mm-hmm. We're going freedom, all the stuff,
right?
How have you been able to keep the culture intact when you are now the leader and the person that everybody's looking to? Because when you're, you know, growing it up, you're the revolutionary. People are like, yeah, you're making mistakes. That's okay. Then a lot of times people get to that pinnacle and, you know, like Jim Collins in his book, How the Mighty Fall, hubris starts to set in. How are you able to keep yourself from that place and you continue? I mean, I have never seen anybody with a business like yours that just continues to, like, you continue to level up.
Yeah, that's a real challenge. And sometimes what I would do is tweak something in the business to see if I can just make something better. So I think if you're running a business or a department or whatever the case may be, don't be afraid to try something new. in that business. Don't be afraid to try a new process or try to adopt a new technology, or, you know, and if it fails, it fails. You'll try something else and move on. You know, hopefully it's not a catastrophic failure. Obviously it's, you know, try to avoid things that could put you out of business if it doesn't work. You know, that's probably a good idea, but you know, it's a way to kind of keep yourself fresh where, and sometimes it's just looking at industry trends, right? What are people doing and how do I need to do something different? And then, and try it. And when you're trying it, that's that sort of revitalization. That's a little bit of energy where, okay, this really needs my attention right now. I really got to get after this and see if I can make this work. And then, and if it does, a lot of times you'll see that that little bump in growth or that little bump in productivity or whatever the case may be. And then on top of that, I try to learn from my peers. You know, there are a lot of really, really, really good people in what I do. There's a lot of really good people in every industry. And guys like yourself, you know, what can I learn from the salon industry? Well, I mean, that's as good of a hospitality industry as anything on the planet. And so I think you just, for me, I try to look for these things that will test myself a little bit. And then every once in a while, I take a big plunge. You know, when I left Volkswagen to open Audi, so I left Findlay Volkswagen in 2007 to open Audi Henderson. And I mean, big pay cut, a brand that was not what Audi is today. Audi in 2007 is not what Audi is now. And people said I was crazy. Like, what is wrong with you? How you have this established store, things are going well, it's profitable, it's yada, yada, yada. And so we opened Audi in November of 07. And then, you know, for those of you who are Kelly and I's age, it was cool for about 6 months. And then it was super uncool for a while.
All the time.
In February of 2009, we sold 8 new cars, 8. And you'll appreciate this, right? My life savings was on the table. All the chips we had and some chips, honestly, we didn't have were on the table. I mean, it was, you know, and so that was a major, major step back to take steps forward, right? I left a comfort zone. I left my comfort zone at Volkswagen to go to Audi. I spent 11 years Audi and Lamborghini, built it into what is a great business. They're thriving. I'm super proud of Peter, who took over for me. He and I worked together for 12 years. Super, super proud of the job he's doing. They're really doing a good job. And then I did it again. I left my comfort zone. I left Audi 2 years ago, and I'm like, here we go, baby. Let's build another one. Let's see what happens.
Well, I think it's amazing because you make things cool, Jim. Like, to me, I mean, I was an Audi fan when I came. Like, it was actually on my anniversary when me and my wife, and unbeknownst to you, I don't think you know this, but right before we came, we went to the Sprinter. We went to see a Sprinter. And my wife was like, why the hell are you going to buy a van? I mean, this was this was in 2012. So I was before the curve, right? Or 2011, right. Before the curve. But, you know, we went over to it and we saw it, and I had enjoyed Audi before, but I, like, you made it cool. And then with Volvo, like, I see it already happening. Like, I see these things and you make things so cool. Like, my brother's daughter now has a Volvo, and I know my brother's going to have one, and I know my sister's going to have one, and we are going to be spending a lot of time in Park City, and we're going to need 4-wheel drive, so we're going to have one. So I talk to me about the industries that you study, and tell me a couple specifically that right now that are blowing your mind that you want to implement that have nothing to do with the car industry that you want to implement, because most people are only studying their own industry, and that's why they stay in that cycle.
Yeah, you know, actually, our industry is big enough that there are things happening inside of our industry that is really on my radar. It's really fascinating to me. And some of it is the brand, the OEM. You know, Volvo does a really, really cool thing right now. Unfortunately for California and New York listeners, not available to you, but it's called Care by Volvo. And it's an all-in-one subscription service. It's It is it's set up on a 2-year contract, but the term really is as little as 4 months. It includes your car insurance, your maintenance, and your road hazard protection all in one payment, right? It's basically exactly like a cell phone subscription. You can upgrade after a year. So 12 months, you want a different color? Get different color. Go do your thing. And that's one where, from an industry trend point of view, some of the other German manufacturers have just eliminated their subscription programs. Porsche still has one, but it's about $2,000 a month. So they're speaking to a different audience. But for me, like, that's one of the things inside the industry where I think, okay, I can see this. I can see the trajectory and the trend, right? So that's something inside the industry, the digitalization of the car business. Something that drives me insane is that our technology doesn't keep up with what I think we should be doing or what I want to do. The fact that you can't buy a car with an e-doc. You know, you can buy a house, you can buy land, you can make a major purpose, you know, purchase. Here, sign this, boom, done. It comes back and away we go. But the DMV still requires a wet ink signature on, like, a secure power of attorney, for instance, right? It's dumb. It baffles me. And so for me, I'm trying to figure out, how do I adapt as much technology as possible, but still play in this box of rules that I have no control over whatsoever? And how do I adapt that to be efficient for the car buying process? How do I make it easy for Kelly to buy a car? How do I make it, you know, more fun? How do I make it on their time? And those are things that are really important. And what's interesting is a lot of industries are able to do things that we can't, be, or at least haven't, because the transactions are a lot simpler, right? When you go to the Apple store, for instance, or you're buying a new iPhone, there's no trade-in. There's no lease agreements. There's a trade-in, but there's no real variance, or it's $100 one way or another. It's not the same process. There's no title work. There's no DMV. There's no registration. There's no, you know, so it's a super easy process. You buy something on Amazon. Okay. You put your credit card number in, they ship it to you, done. So for me, I look at those types of transactions. How are we living our life on a day-to-day basis? We live our life with subscription services. We live our life with online purchases. We live our life, honestly, kind of easy and soft, really. So how do I adopt those types of things while still adhering to the things that I know I have to do? So those are things that I look for outside of the car business, is a lot of transactional type of stuff. Unfortunately, there's not as many cultural places that I can look. The transaction places are easy, but the cultural places are more difficult to find places. Although I'll tell you one that's spectacular is Disneyland. Disney does it. That is a full-on luxury experience. They mask that with Goofy and Minnie and rides and cotton candy and whatever. That is a luxury experience. I don't care what anybody says. It is. They do a great job.
So when you talked about soft, talk to us about when you have as much technology, when you have these things at your fingertips. Let's talk about two-part question. How do you create grit in your kids, because they're growing up in, I mean, yeah, we could say that Stacy and Jim right now ain't struggling, you know, and I'm not saying that everything is perfect, but I'm saying that it's different than when you started. And how are you able to impart that grit in your staff that literally, like, you have 5-6 stories behind you that, if Jimmy is breaking ground, this is going to be the coolest place in Vegas. This is going to be one of the coolest places in America, and this is going to be one of the best cultures. That's a spent check. I already know that's going to happen. How are you able to keep that fire and desire in people? What are some of the things that a person can do to almost manufacture that when it's not forced upon them?
I think there's a few things that are super important. Number one is, a lot of times the person who wins is the one who holds onto the rope the longest. You know, you just, you got to keep showing up. Keep showing up. And that's what I teach my kids. You know, keep showing up. Okay, it didn't go your way. So now what? Right? Keep showing up. Good. You've got to show up. And you got to show up with a good attitude. And attitude and effort is everything. I had a potential employee sit across from me a week ago. They said, what's the secret? What do you think it takes? Attitude and effort every time. And that's all I've asked every time with my kids playing sports. Play hard, have fun. Play hard, have fun. Attitude and effort. I don't feel like going to practice. You're going. All right. Hey, I don't feel like taking you to practice, but you're going. You know, and so I think that grit, and then really, and some people just have this naturally more than others. It's sometimes can be really difficult to teach, but you got to have a will to compete. Got to have a will to compete, because that will help separate you from other people who maybe mail it in. Maybe they don't show up. You know, maybe something gets a little hard and they succumb to that, to their brain saying, "Oh, this stinks." And they give up, they let go of the rope, and then they're starting back over, right? They're gaining traction. They may not even know that they're gaining traction, but they're making progress. They're gaining. And then they have a couple tough days in a row and they let go of the rope, and then it's over. Now you got to start all over.
So do you think that attitude is born or can it be developed?
Oh, I think it can be developed. Absolutely. Yeah. I haven't always had a great attitude. As a matter of fact, when I was in middle school, you know, I told you, you know, my folks had split up and, you know, I had a counselor for a little while. You know, it wasn't like I just sailed through that and everything was cool. And everything I thought about was this great, big, amazing world. And I'm going to go be somebody and I'm going to, you know, that the 12-year-old Jim wasn't thinking that. Right. The 12-year-old Jim was feeling sorry for himself. The 12-year-old Jim didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand why my parents had split up. And now all of a sudden, you know, I'm coming home to one parent instead of two. And, you know, the 12-year-old me, you know, I didn't shoot. The 22-year-old Jim didn't necessarily have a great attitude. I mean, I think it's absolutely learned. Yeah, I think and sometimes it gets learned by hardship. Sometimes it gets learned, by grace. Sometimes it gets learned by a mentor. Sometimes success maybe sometimes helps breed it. I think there's a lot of ways that attitudes and mindsets can shift and change over time, but nobody is excluded from having a great attitude.
So how is it, Jim, that, I mean, you work with people, right? And your success is based off of people performing at a level, right? Because it's not just Jim out there running every department and you do it with so much grace. How are you able to have empathy when you've gone through all the things that you've gone through and then someone calls you and says, I'm not coming into work today because my toe hurts. When you've gone through 70-hour work weeks, because I think a lot of leaders out there, a lot of times they disconnect and they don't have as much empathy. I struggled with this for a long time because I was like, look, guys, I mean, you know, parents split up. They stayed together, but they split up for a while. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment with five people. You know, didn't have, we got free lunch and we used to sell the lunch tickets to be able to get money. You know, things like that me and my brother went through. Yeah. And then I have a kid who maybe doesn't have that much challenge in my head. And I struggled with empathy. How are you able to be so empathetic when, like, you have gone through the ringer and done so much to be able to get where you're at? How are you able to keep that?
I think a few things. You know, my hardships compared to a lot of other people aren't that big of a deal. They were big to me, but in the grand scheme, it's like, okay, you know, yeah, I worked super hard and yeah, I had some things not go my way and yeah, I've had disappointments and setbacks, but really, really, I've been super blessed and fortunate. And I try to keep that humility when I'm talking and dealing with other people. You know, I don't know what somebody's going through at home. It could be tough. Could be bad. I mean, it could be something that would make me call into work too. I don't know. But if I have relationships with my employees and we trust each other, then a lot of times I can talk and we can talk through that. And, you know, I can not literally, obviously, give them a little pat on the butt and say, all right, you know, let's get back in the game. Let's go. And I think that trust as a leader where they trust you really helps you break down some of those conversations. And I'm not going to lie about it. There's times where somebody will call in or mail it in, right? And I'm just like, my head wants to explode. And I gotta peel myself back and say, okay, how can I communicate with this person so that they can hear my message? Because as leaders, we're responsible for what we say, but we're also responsible for what they hear. And if I can't communicate something effectively to somebody so that they can hear it, you got to hear Jimmy. if they can't hear it, I need to say it a different way. I need to figure out how to frame this in a manner in which they understand.
So how are you able to connect with so many different generations? Because you're having people, you know, come in at so many different places, and you truly, I've never seen you not become someone's friend immediately. Where did you get this, and how can someone develop it?
I think from an employee point of view, one of the things I try to do is let them know that I have the back. I'll tell them in an interview or day one of the job, if you show up with a good attitude and you care about the store and you care about the people in the store, I will always have your back. Always. And I think that helps break down that barrier a little bit, especially with younger people. You know, sometimes younger people, and I don't think I'm intimidating in even the littlest possible way. I'm like, how is somebody nervous to talk to? That's the silliest thing I've ever heard in my life. But when you're 20 or you're 22, and this is the person who's running the company or who's an owner in the company, it is in their mind, it's like this is somebody, you know, whatever. Right. And so I try to let them know early and often, hey, I got your back. You're doing great. Keep it up. I got your back. And then so when things don't go well, I now have a different level that I'm able to communicate with somebody, you know, on that level. And as far as just making friendships, it's just not that hard to be nice. I mean, just be nice. I mean, like that is, I think that's the first step to hospitality, right? I mean, if your people are nice to everybody who walks in the door, you're ahead of the game. If you're nice to people that you come in contact with, you're ahead of the game. And to me, that's the number one thing. Just be nice. Be a nice person. Right? There's so much garbage and negativity and noise that, and you'll be amazed if you're a little bit intentional about bringing people into your life, how easy it really is.
So let's talk about nuances, because when you go to a place, I mean, and I want to ask you this, like when I walk into a place, I'm a cultural guy, right? So like I want to help people to build cultures, things like that. So I'm constantly looking. Like I'm constantly just looking, but there's times where I'll just shut it off. I'll enjoy it. Like I have friends who do lighting or sound for concerts, and I ask them all the time, like, can you go to a concert? And they're like, well, I'm watching what light is where and all the stuff.
Right.
When you go and have an experience, you go to like stay at the Four Seasons, or you go to dinner at STK, or you go wherever. We can't do that right now. Obviously, you'll be eating outside or taking it in a brown sack and taking it home.
It's a little better here than there, but it's not the same experience, that's
so
for sure.
Tell me about some of the nuances that you pick up on that some people aren't aware of that you're seeing that makes the whole environment different.
Yeah, there are a couple things that I think are super, super important. Number one is B+. A great friend of mine, Doug Fleming, I worked with him at Volkswagen. He's the GM of our Chevy store right now. That's like I don't know if he has a tattoo, but he might, that says B plus, most positive guy ever. So be positive. That is one of the number one things I look for. And you don't have to look very hard. You can walk into an organization and you can tell pretty quickly, are people happy? Do they have a positive mindset? Are they there? Are they there because they have to be, or are they there because they want to be? And those are two totally different things, right? So B plus, I look for positivity. I also have another thing that is huge with me: be brilliant at the basics. Be brilliant at the basics. Every organization has fundamentals that they've got to be good at in order to have success. And those fundamentals are going to fall into different buckets, right? So for instance, if you're in a customer service business, one of those buckets is going to be hospitality. And so what are the basics of hospitality? Be nice, right? Never give a customer the finger. And by that, I mean, where's the restroom? Oh, it's over there. You can't even see me pointing. I'll try to get on the camera. Oh, the restroom's over there. Well, no. Get up, walk the person over near the restroom. Nice gesture. It's right here. Call in. Certainly, it would be my pleasure. The basics of those little hospitality things. How is the facility? I'm a big facility guy. Is it clean? Is it well maintained? Do the people have pride in where they work and what the facility is? Are there enough waste bins, and are they located where people can see them? And you know that carpet that's peeling up over there, you think they're going to replace that, or are they going to do something about that? The light bulb that's burned out, and that's just one little aspect. That's one bucket of a customer service business, right? Like for instance, cutting hair. Let's say women's cut, whatever style. Give me two or three basics right away, fundamentals that come to your mind.
Where you stand, where your elevation is as far as your arm, and the scissor choice that you have.
Boom, there you go, right? No hesitation, you know exactly what it is. Boom, just like that. Because that's one of the basics for what you do. And it has to be taught, and it has to be reinforced, and it has to be something that becomes a habit over time. And it's the same thing in our business, whether it's a sales process or a service process or whatever the case may be brilliant at the basics. And if you follow those, if you're fundamentally sound, and again, this goes back to sports, when I was a quarterback in middle school and high school, oh my gosh, the repetition of the first step away from center, agony, but it's got to be a habit. It has to become a habit. And so you have to reinforce those things over and over and over and over until they become habitual. And then guess what? You're going to hire a new employee. you're going to have somebody leave, or you're going to grow and expand, and you're going to hire a new employee. And now guess what you got to do? You're doing it all over again.
So we had in our locations, and I don't even like to say this because now people are going to be looking at it, but we have what's called the Kyle Komodo rule. And what the Kyle Komodo rule is that a guy named Kyle Komodo came in. This was when I worked at the Mandalay Bay. He had came in and he hadn't been in for 6 months. I said, Kyle, I hadn't seen you in 6 months. I generally see you every 4 to 6 weeks.
Right. Yep.
What's been going on? You go on vacation, whatever. He's like, you want me to tell you the truth? I said, yes. He said, well, for the amount that I spend for a haircut, which, by the way, Kelly, is exorbitant. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. And I understand that.
Sure, yeah.
But he said, for that price and what I pay, the last time, 6 months ago, when I came in, there was hair on the baseboards. And for that much money, I should never see hair on the baseboards.
Yep.
And I realized at the time that it was the details. It was the little things.
Yeah.
Tell us about a Kyle Komodo rule in Jim's practice right now, specifically, that you are, I mean, obviously you're a big picture guy. You're a visionary guy, but for me, seriously, I could walk into any salon and see hair on the baseboards, and I will be on the floor with a towel wiping it off. What is that for you?
How the lot looks. The cars better be lined up. They better be lined up by model. The bumpers better be lined up, because that's the first impression. When somebody pulls on the lot, the first impression, just like you, your eye goes to the baseboard. When I pull onto a car lot, Is it displayed well? Does it make sense? And some, you know, physically, sometimes that can be a challenge with a certain environment. Maybe you've only got 12 spots in the front row and most of your inventory is in the back, or maybe you're in a metro environment and you have cars in four separate warehouses and your parking garages. And so, you know, in Las Vegas, we're pretty blessed with real estate. We're able to have some acreage, which makes that job a lot easier. But to me, it's when somebody pulls onto the lot, what do they see? You know, if an employee decides that they're going to start smoking in front of my building, they'll do that one time. I'll tell you that one time. And because if there's a second time, they won't be an employee anymore, but we'll have a talk immediately right now, because I don't want a client to pull on and it looks like, you know, the movie Used Cars or something like that. You can't have that reinforcement of negative perception ever. So that is one of those right now, boom, it better be tidy.
So I think one of the coolest things for you too, Jim, is like, you have transcended, and I don't think of you in the car business. I think of you in the people business. This is what my pop said. Yep. And I think of you in the people business. How have you been able to stay so motivated, so positive in that realm? Because when you said, like, a lot of times, and when I say that, you and I are in parallel industries, meaning that when I got into this business, when I got into my business 29 years ago, it wasn't a cool thing to be a hairdresser. And people said, like, oh, well, you did that because you couldn't do something else. And it wasn't looked at as an art. And it definitely wasn't taken seriously. And especially, Jim, when I went to buy a car. When I went to buy a car and they looked at me, they would always take me to the smallest bucket on the lot and be like, this one's for you. And I'd be like, no, I want that one over there. They're like, no, this one's for you.
Yeah.
When you have bad connotation in an industry, you know, and I'm not saying that like it's industry wide, but you already talked about some of those things and opened them up.
Mm-hmm.
But you continue to elevate. Sometimes people run away from that. They're like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to be in this industry because of the stigma of it. But you were like, I want to be in this industry because of the stigma of it. How are you able to stay in that level and continue to level up?
Well, you said it exactly right. We're in the people business, and we all are. And so to me, I look, just like we talked about earlier, I look at other experiences. How do they do it? How do they stay fresh? What processes do they have in place? How are they able to maintain a high level of service? And I think the number one thing is you have to have an attitude of gratitude. You know, without clients, we're unemployed. We got no business. You have to have clients, and you have to appreciate clients, and not all of them are great. I mean, let's call it like it is, right? It's, you know, there's times where I'm literally sitting across from somebody thinking, ain't that hard to be nice? you can start being nice anytime right now. I'm totally cool with that. If you just want to start being cool, I'm okay with that. But there still has to be an attitude of gratitude and the realization that that's what we're here for. We're here to serve. We're here to serve other people and help other people. And you know, there's emotion that goes along with that. And there's money that goes along with it. And there's self-esteem. And there's a lot of things that go along with it. But I think above all else, if you have an attitude of gratitude and you're happy that somebody is engaged in your business and happy that somebody wants to do business with your organization, then you're going to be okay. You're going to be in good shape.
Jim, how have you in a bottom line industry? I mean, you're in a bottom line industry. How in that industry have you been able to put culture first? Because a lot of times people are super excited about the word culture. They're excited about the buzzword part of it. But then there's the people who are like, yeah, all the fluffy stuff. I ain't trying to give nobody hugs. I just want to make money. How have you been able to be as successful financially and on the bottom line when you're simply focusing on culture?
I think if I sell and service enough cars, the bottom line will take care of itself. And that's how I've always viewed it. It's in one hand, it's really simple. And listen, there are people who are better at making money than I am, for sure. They will generate higher profits. They will generate higher bottom lines. Maybe that's, you know, for me, maybe that's not, but I look at it very simply. If I can form enough relationships, if I can sell and service enough cars, everything else will take care of itself.
So, I mean, all you listening out there, you understand why I have this young man on the podcast. And I'm going to ask for a second episode because I want to be able to dig even deeper and I want to be able to help people to construct these types of cultures. And I believe you that you're changing the game. You've changed the game for me. I look at the car industry completely different. Like, and I hold it. My standard is you, Jim. Like my standard. And I told you before, like, for all of you listening out there, if you have not experienced buying a car with Jim, then you haven't experienced buying a car. Like, you really, truly haven't experienced the pinnacle of it. Like, I thought that I had been to some nice hotels until I ended up at the Four Seasons in Maui. Once I got there, then I said, okay, here's this one. And I'm rating everything based off of that. There was things that I didn't understand. You brought me to an understanding of that industry that was completely different and an enjoyment part of it. And also a legacy part of it where I know, I mean, which is, you said that time goes by fast. My daughter's 12. When my daughter turns 16, Uncle Jimmy is who we're calling.
Yeah. I got you, baby. So, got you.
So I want to tell you this. I started the podcast because of them, right? Because of my kids.
Yeah.
Maddox, 9 years old, absolute superhero. The kid is just, he's got Maddox style. He's his own character. And McKenna, who is 12 years old, and she is just the heart of and soul of our family. I did it because I wanted them to see iconic people like you, people who have accomplished such crazy success, and I wanted to humanize you and help them to understand that if you want to be able to do what Uncle Jimmy does, you simply have to have a great attitude, like you told us, you have to show up, and you have to just work really, really hard. What advice would you have for Maddox and McKenna, and if you could say their names when you look into the screen, it would be awesome, Maddox and McKenna.
Absolutely. So Maddox and McKenna, I think there are a few things that I love talking to people about. Number one, life is a team sport. Relationships count, value relationships, develop relationships, and they're not always going to work out. And some of them are going to hurt, but a lot of them are amazing. And those relationships are absolutely critical. And I've never known anybody that's successful in my life ever that doesn't want to pay it forward. Successful people want to help other people be successful, but their time isn't free. So you've got to be the kid that they want to help. And that's by showing up with a great attitude and buy-in and really trying, like really putting an effort in there. And when you do that, successful people will see that. And then you can form a relationship with that person that has, you know, endless learning opportunities or you know, things, doors will open. Absolutely. Because people do want to pay it forward. People do want to help other people. You just got to be worth it to them. And I think that's really, really important. I think it's important to mute the noise. There's so many negative inputs in our life. Social media and media, you know, all sorts of things, haters, doubters, just mute that out. You know, life is pretty easy when you have a target. If you have something in mind that you want to accomplish, you're going to get there. If you keep working towards it, sometimes it might feel like you're chopping a redwood down with a pocket knife, right? You're going to have to hit it a lot of times. I mean, you might just have to keep whacking at it. Keep whacking at it, keep hitting it, keep eventually might need to sharpen the blade, but eventually you're going to get there. So I think those are really, really important. I think school's an interesting one because it's not always fun. Sometimes it's kind of meh. Sometimes kids aren't very nice. Sometimes it's kind of whatever, right? But learning is cool. Learning, if you have a quest to continue to learn, then literally the sky is the limit. And you're growing up in a time where information is available at your fingertips. I mean, it is now and it's instant and it's amazing. And it's, you know, you look at all the stuff around and if you look at the positive things, there are so many things out there that are, it's like mind blowing, and that's all at your fingertips. And so get after it, get after the learning, and because it's not always going to be, you know, wonderful in the structured like school environment. Sometimes it's just how it goes for all of us. Right. We all the bad days and people weren't very nice, but that will pass. So develop a quest for learning. And then I think lastly, you're loved. You're loved by God. You're loved by your family. You're going to have times in your life that's a struggle. You're going to have times that the train is not necessarily on the tracks, but you always got to remember that circle of influence that you have, you know, for me, how I feel about your mom and dad, you guys hit the lottery. You know, you guys are super fortunate to have a faith-based family, a family that loves you, a family that's engaged, a family that's around you and supportive, and including Uncle Jimmy, if you need me, I'm here. Just reach out if you need me, I'm here. But I think it's really important to remember that you're loved, because those setbacks are going to happen, and life can be a little challenging sometimes. And so just take a step back and say, you know what, this too shall pass. It's going to be okay. And remember that you have an unbelievable circle of influence around you.
Well, Jim, every listener out there, you understand why I've been friends with this man for, it's been almost, you know, 10, 11 years.
Yep.
And it just continues to grow. I think I've told you in the past that I'm going to force you to be my friend for the rest of your life. Jim,
perfect.
You deliver every single time. You deliver on a higher level than what my expectation is. And my expectation of Jim is very, very high. For all of you out there, and I don't plead, and I've never done this before, this is not a commercial for Jim's company, but I tell you, if you want that next level in the car experience when you purchase a car, you need to spend time with Uncle Jimmy. And so I want to thank you for being on the podcast, man. You have been absolutely phenomenal. This is the time where you click the links, guys, every one of you listening, click the link, subscribe, do all the things that you know you need to do. Check out all of our sponsors. And, you know, we want to thank you for listening to the Kelly Cardenas podcast. And, Jim, you have been amazing.
Kelly, thanks for having me on, man. It's been a great pleasure. It's great to virtually see you. I can't wait to hang out next time in person. And for those of you listeners that have questions about the car business, right? You know, you're all over the country or the world or whatever, just DM me, hit me up, do something. And I'm a resource. It's just like when Kelly bought a car from somebody else, I'm here. I'm just here to answer questions and help make it easier and less confusing and more enjoyable. So don't be afraid to hit me up and Kelly, hopefully we do that other episode. I'll be ready for sure.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you again for listening, everybody. We appreciate you. And Jim, you're officially off the hot seat.